I guess it's not going to work today. Yeah.
Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Here we go with, believe it or not, it's already Thursday. So it's the Thursday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you would like to call into the podcast and speak to us, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays. So if you haven't had a chance yet, swing on over there. Yesterday's blog is still hanging out at the top of the page, so you can catch up like you never missed anything. See how that works? Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly, greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, Dan and I are out there on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and you can find Dan the Man at Dan the Man with three E's. And I know I normally don't do Dan's intro for him, but he is tied up at the very moment. He will be returning any second. So we will be getting into our normal, wonderful banter that Dan and I always have with each other. But I ran into, you know, another one of those goofy, you know, issues that I seem to keep having this morning. You know, I get home and I like to turn on the MLB Network and catch up with what's going on. And, you know, they have their morning show, which is what, I don't even remember what it's called now. It's Hot Stove in the off season. I think this is just like MLB Central or something. And, you know, they mentioned, I believe, the A's right now are on the longest winning streak in baseball. So they were talking about the A's and covering the outing that Frankie Montas had for Oakland last night. He pitched 6 shutout innings, struck out 9, walked 2, gave up 5 hits against the Indians as Oakland picked up a 7-2 win. I believe that's Oakland's 6th or 7th win in a row. So they are rolling, but they got to talking about Montas, who is, you know, having a really good season. He's 6-2 in his 10 starts with a 2.40 ERA. Now, you know, he's not racking up a ton of innings, but we know starters don't. He does have 60 innings, and he does have 61 strikeouts to only 13 walks. Now, oddly, while I was watching the program, stupidly, Robert Flores just kind of stumbled into how the fact that this is Montas's 4th team. All right, which is true. He wasn't saying anything, you know, wrong about that. But the way he implied it was the other 3 teams had given up on him, which is, which is the exact opposite of what has happened. Now, Montas has been a very highly rated prospect. So here's what actually went down. The Red Sox were the original team that signed him. At the trading deadline in 2013, they shipped him off to the White Sox as part of a 3-team deal. That was also the deal where the White Sox got Avisail Garcia. The Tigers were the 3rd team in, and the main player they got was Jose Iglesias. Now, the big piece the Red Sox were after was Jake Peavy. Now, if I remember right, I do believe, you know, let me double check. I don't know how much Peavy actually was of assistance to the Red Sox that year. Let's see. He went to Boston. Oh, actually, he was pretty good record-wise. He was 4-1 in his 10 starts, but he did have a 4.04 ERA. How was his postseason? He made 3 starts for the Red Sox in the postseason. He was really good in the ALDS, really bad in the ALCS, and just kind of blah in the World Series. But the important thing was the fact that I believe the Red Sox won the World Series that year, and that's why they were looking to add Peavy. Now, of course, when you're looking to add a guy like this, you have to give something up, and Montas was one of the guys they had to give up to get the deal done. So by no means were the Red Sox giving up on him. That was just complete stupidity. And then in turn, the White Sox dealt him. Oddly enough, he ended up as part of another they sent him to the Los Angeles players from the Cincinnati Reds, who sent some players to the Chicago White Sox. Now, in return here, the White Sox picked up Todd Frazier, which was the big piece they wanted. The Reds got Jose Peraza and he got the Dodgers obviously didn't get a lot of help out of this. You know, they got Mike Johnson and Frazier Thompson along with Montas. So Montas was the big piece the Dodgers were getting there. You know, it was a time choice. You know, big-time power hitter. You know, Peraza and Scheffler were actually looked like they were going to have futures. So you can understand now why these guys were traded for Montas. In no way, shape, or form did the White Sox give up on him, as Robert Flores was implying. And then the third and final deal that gets the A's, okay, when the A's pick up Montas, they got him along with Grant Holmes and Jarrell Cotton. From the Dodgers, you know, currently the Dodgers get Rich Hill and Washington. You know, obviously, Hill is still there, and again, you know, well, I think there's multiple World Series back-to-back with the Dodgers. I don't think they've won any yet, but they've gotten there. And then Reddick was a big piece helping them out at, you know, the deadline in 2016. So now to imply that the Dodgers gave up on him, it is really incredibly stupid. And again, we get to the point where it's just it's ridiculous journalism, because here you got Robert Flores, who works for the MLB Network, who obviously know all this, or at least should know all this. What is difficult for me to find it out, as computer literate as I am, if I can go out there and find it out, there's absolutely no reason somebody from the MLB Network couldn't find it out, and I'm sure they know. It was just Flores' own stupidity and the way he was implying that these three teams have given up on Montas, and now he's a star for the A's. No, he was a highly rated prospect all along that people actually thought was going to be a very good pitcher. And, you know, he finally getting his shot here with the A's. And now, you know, to be fair, it took him a little bit. He wasn't walk into the park and I'm going to take over type of guy. You know, his first year was open, they used him out of the bullpen, and it was rough. 23 games, he had a carry over 7. Last year they eased him in, he was much better. 13 games, he made 11 starts with a 3.88 ERA, and now this year, you know, he's rolling along. He's fantastic. So, and again, it's just the stupidity that gets him, because, like I said, they have access to all this. You know, you would say, this guy's not a former player. He's not a analyst. He's just a studio host. Pay attention to what you're talking about. You know, is it really that difficult to go and look and see? I mean, this guy was moved around for credible major league players with teams trying to, in two cases, it was teams trying to win the World Series, and him being part of deals that moved him at the deadline for these teams to try to win the World Series. And in the Red Sox case, they did. So I don't understand how that, you know, and now to be fair, he never said that they gave up on him. He just really implied that they gave up on him. It was just kind of the way he said, well, you know, this is his fourth team. Yeah, well, you know, this is his fourth team, idiot. You know, look at the stats, and it just drives me freaking nuts that they can't do this. I don't know. I don't get it. I'm just, maybe I'm overbearing with it.
a little bit of a thing. So,
Dan, do I got to learn what to do?
Yes and no. I think what's irritating, what you obviously put out there, is the fact that this guy not only has the job of covering baseball, but basically works directly for MLB, so he should know. And, I mean, like you said, this kid was traded from the Red Sox in 2013 so they could win the World Series. It's now 6 years later, so it took him some time.
Yeah, it really, you know, it took him 10 years to blossom. He was signed in 2009. So it took him 10 years to get where he is. So, you know, it's not like he was an overnight pitching sensation, but, you know, they always thought he would be very good. So
he actually was drafted in 2009?
He was signed in 2009 as an amateur free agent.
Holy cow.
I forgot where he is from. I would have to jump.
Yeah, I don't think that's hugely relevant. It's just the fact that you're going to say four teams gave up on him, but for the Braves were there once back in the day. But for the Red Sox, by 2013, if he's not ready to be moved up, and you're able to land a guy that's going to help you in the World Series, as Jake Peavy did. And the only reason I remember he was there was obviously not because you just threw out his numbers, but we actually talked about Peavy like 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, did he ever get the ring? And you're like, well, actually he did with the Red Sox and I think somebody else. Besides the point, I mean, if you're not in the major leagues after, you know, 4 to 5 seasons for the team and they're able to move you to get, you know, a quality veteran, that's just what's going to happen. And, I mean, to say the White Sox gave up on him, you know, with the way their system goes, they hang on to their pitchers. They usually generally the ones they draft. So, you know, I could see it kind of there, but I think he also has to remember at the time, what's his name? Kenny was still there, so Kenny was just always grasping for straws. And as far as Kenny's regime goes, it was almost like Tom Thibodeau's, where rookies didn't really play a whole lot for the White Sox.
Yeah, you know, and then looking back at his stats, the first year he played for the Red Sox was 2010. He actually didn't break into the top 100 prospects until 2015. So it took 4 minor league seasons before even the guys who do the rankings noted. So he was really under the radar, you know, so to speak there. So yeah, you know, I don't, you know, and it, you know, again, it's just the thing where it's the giving up on him thing, that the way he implied it just really bothered me, because, you know, again, it was just a case of a studio host who's, you know, never played the game at the professional level, assuming that these three teams gave up. So, you know, the odd part is, I mean, you could have said that about Rich Hill, because there were multiple teams that gave up on Rich Hill because he couldn't stay healthy, and he was actually to the point where he was pitching in the independent league before he got another shot. Montas was just moving himself up to the minors. You know, there was no issue whatsoever that you had to figure sooner or later he was going to get a look at the major league level. You know, it was just how long will it take him to get there, and we know it took him, you know, eight seasons before he became a full-time starter in a rotation. But, yeah, like I said, I don't know. Maybe I'm just, you know, I guess maybe I expect too much out of these guys. I don't really know what's going on. I'm not going to talk. I would, you know, I would like to think that you're getting the, you know, the idea, or, you know, somebody could have told them, but it, you know, it also possibly could have just been an off the cuff remark, you know, thinking he knew what he was talking about because he knew that he had, you know, three other teams before landing in Oakland. And yeah, there you go. So.
Well, at least he's getting his opportunity.
Who, Robert Flores or Frank Mathis?
The pitcher.
Oh, okay. So I wasn't sure there. But all right, enough of my ramblings there. We, you know, of course, being that it's Thursday, we had a boatload of games. We still have going on. We have some finals. The Mets actually swept the Nationals, Dan. Remember last week they were talking about firing the manager? All they need was a series against the Nationals and everything fine. They beat them 6-4. The Pirates beat up the Rockies 14-6. The Yankees beat the Orioles again. I think it was the time 6-5. Boston beat Toronto 8-6. Detroit 5-2. And the Phillies ended up beating the Cubs 7-4. If you had looking at Robert Gesselman, George Jones, Tommy Canley, Ryan Weber, Taylor Kinney, or Aaron Nola, you picked up a win today. If you have Edwin Diaz, Zach Britton, Sergio Romo, or Hector Neris, you have locked in a save. So,
well, I locked in a lot set with John Lester.
Oh, you had John Lester? Yeah. Surprisingly for Detroit, Shane Green took the loss. He'd been closing everything down, but we're, you know, the games we still have going, Atlanta and San Francisco is headed into extra innings at 4-4. Minnesota is kind of cleaning up on the Angels here. It's 14-2 in the top of the eighth, and Tampa Bay leads Cleveland 3-0 in the bottom of the second. Had Atlanta, San Francisco, obviously these guys are long gone now. Kevin Gausman and Madison Bumgarner started. Minnesota at Los Angeles, it was Marcus Perez and Matt Harvey. And then the opener for Tampa Bay today was Ryan Yarbrough. I'm guessing it's the bottom of the second. He's probably out of the game. And Cleveland up with Adam Lucco. Yeah, they called him up today. So,
sure.
And then the only night game tonight, Dan, the only game not played as of right now, the White Sox and the Astros. Your guy Lucas Giolito will get the start for the White Sox, and Corbin Martin is the Astros start pitcher today. So there we are. We are set and caught up and happy.
Yarbrough on one of my teams, but when I was going through this morning, they didn't have him checked off like he was playing.
Yeah, I saw the transaction today, so I don't remember who they put on the DL or if they shipped somebody down, but yeah, he came back. So, all right, and I got to throw this at you. I mentioned when we were going through everything, you know, the Mets were, well, you know, maybe it was more the media was dead set on having Mickey Callaway fired. You know, they roll into a series against Washington. They win all four games. They're 24-25. You know, they're 4.5. They're just a game under 500. 4.5 back from the Phillies. So you got to assume that talk is going to stop. My question now, Dan, is the Nationals are 19-31. Why aren't they talking about this with Martinez? I mean, I've heard nothing about him being replaced.
Because he gets along with the younger crowd.
Right. So that saves his job?
Yeah, I don't. Well, I mean, does that kind of let us know that maybe he's getting everything handed from the front office?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure, you know, since they haven't switched the front office there with Washington, you know, Mike was able to build a defense. I don't know, but I, you know, this day and age, it's all possible, you know, that he's being given the lineup and told what he's going to be doing. But, you know, he did have a cool ejection today, if that helps. So, but, yeah, I love the way he's going. When it comes to time, you know, the trade line, you've got to think those sellers, who would they move? Do you think they would deal an Anthony Rendon who's headed to free agency? Or would they possibly try to sell a third spot for him and really load up on the roster?
I've heard some geniuses talk about, and local guys, about the Cubs getting Rendon.
Where would he play?
He would play third base, and then you'd just move Brian out to left field, and then, you know, Schwarber would, I guess, be out of a job.
Well, no, I guess that means Hayward plays, or no, didn't you move Ryan to right, Hayward to center, and it would be Almora who loses his job, like always?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, you move Ryan to right. I mean, because, you know, and oddly, I didn't really take a whole lot of stock into what you were saying about Ben Zobrist not coming back at all, and I guess that's all in all a potential possibility.
All right, well, believe it or not, I did notice when we started talking about this, there's actually an article on MLB.com by Mark Feinsand, or maybe it's Feinsand, whatever. He has 6 landing spots for Rendon here, Dan, and the majority of them are ludicrous, but I want to make fun of this guy for a go. Absolutely no surprise at all, Dan, the very first team he has listed, because, as we know, everybody goes to the Yankees. You know, Gio Urshela has been really good. Obviously, they're without Andujar for the rest of the year. So I guess this makes a little sense, but your guys need to be coming back soon. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, first of all, I was going to say, of course he would go to the Yankees because everybody's hurt on the Yankees. But, you know, if Didi comes back, Gleyber Torres, I don't know if you really want him at third, even though, you know, the other day he had, like, this big 2-home-run game. So I think it makes a challenge. Who's playing second for the Yanks?
Well, that's actually the plan, Dan. Torres would go back to second, and DJ LeMahieu would take over in third base.
Oh, I forgot about LeMahieu. Forgot he was there. Because then they have a hot shot third baseman. Or no, that was Tulo playing short.
Right. And, you know, they had Andujar, who had a great season.
Yeah, from what I understand, he's done for the season, ain't it?
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of talk that they don't like him as an everyday third baseman. There's a lot of talk that he has another position in the field. You know, possibly first, or maybe actually end up being a full-time DH. So
that's not a bad idea, because I was going to say, you know, the Cubs had a plethora of shortstop outfielders, but I feel like the Yankees just have tons of players that play every position up and down, and they're all great players. So, you know, I don't see adding Andujar really an option for the Yankees. Unless they're just giving up money or something. I don't know, because who would you really want to part with on this team?
Well, you know, obviously if they're making the deal, it's for prospects. Well, maybe your guy Clint Frazier could go to another team to play somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, but all right, well, here's the second team on the list. He thinks it would be fantastic. Well, Indians made a trade for Rendon. Because Jose Ramirez has been a disappointment, even though he was, you know, a back-to-back MVP candidate the last couple of years. I guess they're assuming that, you know, 48 or 50 games of the season is done. You also have to remember that the Indians were the team that talked about cutting salary all offseason as it's trading Corey Kluber or possibly Trevor Fowler. So I don't know if they would want to add a higher salary player in Rendon, even if it was just half the season. So that could be kind of interesting. But, yeah, it really kind of drops in as to where the hell would he play, you know, unless they've got an opening at DH. You know, they did just let Cargo go, so maybe that's an open spot.
Possibly.
But, yeah, so I don't know.
I don't see that either. So, next.
Yeah, it like much to me. All right, well, now, this one will never happen because it's in division. But he likes the idea of sending him to the Phillies. You know, Mikel Franco got off to a pretty good start, and he does have 7 home runs, but he has scuffled since then. And there's been a lot of talk of the Phillies replacing Franco for 2 or 3 years now. It just hasn't happened. You know, I guess my question here, Dan, is if you're going to make this move, Franco doesn't have another position, so does he go to Washington in the trade, even though I don't think it would be something the Nationals want, or would he just sit on the bench the rest of the year?
I think he gets stuck sitting on the bench.
You know, because, yeah, I don't know, you know, how much this makes sense. And, you know, again, we're talking about this would be the Nationals giving their best everyday player to the team that is currently leading their division. That doesn't happen all that often in Major League Baseball. So I think that would be the biggest negative here. You know, unless the Phillies just blew him away with an offer. But, again, we're talking about a Russia player, the free agent at the end of the year, and it's probably going to want to test the market because he's going to be the best third baseman out there. So, all right, let's keep moving here, Dan. We have our next destination. You ready for this one?
Oh, yeah.
Going to the Milwaukee Brewers. All right, now, you know, the Brewers just called up their top prospect, who's actually been doing pretty well. Travis Shaw's on the IL, but I'm under the impression that this guy forgot that the Brewers also signed Mike Moustakas in the offseason, and they're in the National League now, so there's no DH. So, we run into this exact same situation of what the hell are they going to do with him?
They can play second.
You know, but they've got the prospect up. Why would you take it bats away from your prospect?
Well, I was just Moustakas was playing second.
So you send that kid back down. You put Rendon at third base, Moustakas at second, and I know Travis Shaw is off to a horrible start, so he goes to the bench and he sits there.
Well, not to mention the guy from Japan who's American.
Oh. Eric Thames?
Eric Thames.
It's not fantasy sports.
You don't stock up on third baseman for the hell of it.
Right, and that's what this actually looks like. You know, it would be we would have pretty much nobody to play second because neither Moustakas or Shaw is a natural second baseman. But you would have 3 guys who could play third.
Well, that makes sense.
You know, and I get that obviously he would become another huge bat in their lineup. And, you know, it would be kind of interesting to see them do something like that. But
we're almost home, baby.
It's another one of those moves that doesn't make a lot of sense. And then the last two here are incredibly humorous because neither team ever make these kind of moves, and it's not going to happen now. But the fifth team on the list, Dan, here you go, the Pittsburgh Pirates. Yeah. Okay.
Let me guess, they're going to trade Chris Archer for him.
Well, they mentioned Archer in the article about last year, how they went out and did that, and that might be a sign that they're willing to do it again. But, you know, the Pirates aren't a team that likes to give away prospects.
Well, then, except the fact that Archer has, like, three more years left. That Archer
Which
has, like, 3 years left.
Yeah. Which was part of the reason it wasn't big acquiring him.
Yeah, I mean, they're not making a playoff run against the Cubs, Cardinals, and Brewers with Anthony Rendon as their only saving grace. Wow, this guy's really got his head up his hand.
Yeah, I'm baffled at, you know, where he came up with this, but okay. And then the final team, here we go. They're going to do it this year, Dan. The Tampa Bay Rays are the next landing spot. Yeah.
Well,
there you go.
I mean, who do they have playing third? Yandy Diaz? Or is he one of their multiple outfielders?
Yeah, Yandy Diaz actually just went on the IL today. So.
Oh. I mean, that one I think could be thought-provoking.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'll give him credit for this one. At least this one makes some sense because it does look like something that the Rays could use. But this is the Rays, and they don't do these kind of things. Remember, they were contending last year and traded Chris Archer, who had been their best pitcher for, what, 4 years, 5 years? You know, it's just not the, you know, I could see them being on the other end of this kind of deal. And I don't know if, you know, adding Rendon at the trading deadline really allows you to compete with the Yankees and the Red Sox, does it?
No, because, I mean, I don't know their farm system. Does Washington want the Major League-ready player? Because, you know, any of these guys on the – like you said, I think it could be cool for the Rays to make a move like this. It won't really help them draw stuff like that. But – you know, like you said, usually they're the reverse end. So with the players that they have, like Kiermaier, if I'm saying that right, Kiermaier, Tommy Pham, possibly Yandy Diaz, Avisail Garcia, you know, those might be guys they're looking to move.
Right.
For no reason at all.
You know, that's the odd, you know, the odd thing with the Rays. And, you know, you also got to remember, you know, if they were to make this, they would not be in the market to re-sign him.
No.
So this would literally, just a stretch run move for them. You know, there would be no response whatsoever on if, you know, he would be coming back the next year. And, you know, they do have some highly touted prospects. You know, it's just, you know, you're wondering where would they give up a top 30 guy for, you know, a half a year player? You know, I mean, I wouldn't think you'd be giving up a top 10 prospect or maybe even a top 20. You know, maybe you're giving up one top 30 guy and then a couple of other minor leaguers that you're just throwing in.
Yeah, I just... you know, this is one of those situations where it's like, no matter who the other side of the equation is, they kind of the Nationals are more seemingly on the desperate end. Like, well, we got to do this so we can get some. You know what I mean? It's more of a necessity to move him than it is to keep him.
Yeah, you know, and the Nationals are, you know, the only way to really look at it, Dan, is they're such an odd team. You know, I don't understand why they are this bad. You know, I mean, you look at their roster, and that's a pretty good roster. You know, and especially with the top three pitcher. You know, they have a great opportunity to win three out of every five games they play. And for some reason, they're not doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they couldn't do it with Bryce Harper, and, you know.
Right. You know what I mean? You start looking at their numbers, and, you know, they're not all that terrible. You know, obviously, we know Rendon has been fantastic. Gerardo Parra has been, like, a completely different player since coming on board at Washington. You know, Howie Kendrick is actually having a really good year. And then you got, like, Adam Eaton, Juan Soto, you know, Kurt Suzuki, Trey Turner. They're all hitting over 260, which, you know, is solid. You know, it's good. So, you know, you kind of start to wonder, you know, where are they going wrong? You know, I know, like, Victor Robles is only hitting 244, but he showed some power. He's got 8 home runs. You know, and I know Ryan Zimmerman's been hurt, but that's nothing new. Ryan Zimmerman is always hurt. So, yeah, I don't know, you know, why the team stinks this bad. You know, I'm guessing starting pitching after the, you know, the Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin deal hasn't been very good, but I want to double check that. Yeah, Anibal Sanchez has sucked, and Jeremy Hellickson has an ERA over 6. So, yeah, that's probably part of the problem at the back end of the rotation, Dan. Maybe they need to be calling Dallas Keuchel?
They should have. I don't know. In the end, I think Keuchel would have been a better signing than Hellickson, although Hellickson did have that spark in Houston, so... you know, but I mean, they obviously didn't get that Jeremy. They got the guy that the Phillies used to have.
So, yeah, you know, and you, you know, I don't believe, you know, they have any prospect on the verge of breaking through here. I wanted to check that real quick and see if I can get their top 30 and see how they have them rated, but that's absolutely not what I needed. I don't know why the heck I went there. but yeah, so it's kind of baffling when you look at this team that they're as bad as they are. You know, they do have a couple, they got 3 pitchers in their top 5 prospects, but let me see where they are. You know how this goes, Dan. They like to, Dan, explain this one to me. Their third ranked prospect is a pitcher by the name of Mason Denenberger. Okay. Top 3 out of 30, Dan. He hasn't played a game. How the hell do you know top 3?
Because of how he pitched in high school?
Right, you know. Their fourth-rated prospect is Will Crow. He's in AA right now. You know, get a lot of times with these top 30 lists. AA is about as high as you get with these guys. So I'm guessing they probably don't have a guy over AA on this list. But yeah, so I don't know if there's, you know, if comes down the pipeline, obviously AA isn't going to give you much help. So, you know, you'll have to hear whatever kind of goes there. But yeah, I'm you know, again, I get so baffled by this. Ridiculous, you know, records that they just can't seem to, you know, put them together. And, you know, like I said, I mean, they were Callaway last week. Everybody was on board. He had to go. And, know, they wanted him out, and yet here we got the Nationals that are floating around and not doing much, but yet nobody said a word about Davey Martinez. So here you go, Dan.
Well,
I found out that the
new generation of coaching.
Yes. Well, here, Dan, the Nationals AAA team is actually the Fresno Grizzlies.
Yeah, that was this year.
Let me see what we got here. It looks like, hey, Hendrick, do you remember Henderson Alvarez who floated around? I think he's got a no-hitter to his credit. Looks like he's pitching in their AAA level. Other than that, let's see. Scott Copeland has an ERA over 6. Paolo Espino has an ERA over 5. Kyle McGowan, I think, actually made a stop with the Nationals, has an ERA over 4. Looks like he might be the best starter. And then, yeah, another guy named Austin Vogt has an ERA at 4.54. So it doesn't look like they're getting any help out of AAA either. So, you know, it looks like they have a pretty solid reliever. Austin Adams is pitching pretty well in relief there. But, you know, there's not much on the starting grid there, Dan. I don't know what they're going to do. So yeah, that you know, we'll see what the Nationals decide, and if it's, you know, Rendon who gets moved, I'm not sure. You know, my guess is, you know, the Scherzers and Strasburgs and Corbins probably have no trade clauses, so I don't assume that they're going to be going anywhere, you know, without a substantial, you know, pay increase or, you know, a new contract, depending on where they are in their deals. But yeah, other than Rendon, you know, Dan, I know they gave up quite a bit to get Adam Eaton.
Anthony, go inside. Come on, we're going inside. Come on.
Could they get anything in return for Eaton, do you think?
Not if Ozzie Guillen has anything to say about it.
You know, and now, you know, Eaton is in the last year of his deal. He does have 2 club options on his deal. So, a team could take a look at him. I don't know if or how that would work out. But, yeah, you're looking at the guys. I mean, Strasburg has 5 years after this on his deal. Scherzer has 2. You know, and of course Corbin just signed his deal, so he's got 5 years after this as well. I doubt there would be much movement there. So yeah, I mean, other than that, yeah, I don't know. You know, there probably isn't much. I mean, Brian Dozier's been terrible. You're not getting anything for him. I doubt Yan Gomes draws a lot of attention. You know, your relievers have been up and down. I don't think or know there's going to be a lot of a market there. You know, the funny thing is you could probably get something small for Howie Kendrick, because being the veteran he is, I'm sure a team would love to add him on their bench. You know, just the return wouldn't be huge. And, you know, he's in the last year of his deal. But, yeah, they don't really have that star power you think of to bring guys back when you're looking at trades. So.
No, unless they were able to. Move Strasburg or Scherzer.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, Ryan Zimmerman's in the last year of his deal. He's got a club option for $20 million next year. You know, obviously, I know he's been a longtime National. They would be ridiculously stupid to pick that up. You know, there's no reason to bring him back at that price tag. I mean, I find it hard to believe he's making $18 million this year with the history of injuries he's had. But, you know, I guess you got to give credit to his agent, right? So,
Exactly.
You know, just kind of worked out for him. You know. But yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see on, you know, if there's any Davey Martinez news. But you know.
So basically, what I can surmise from our discussion on the Nationals is, are we putting out there that there's basically no hope for this team? they have three of the best pitchers that in baseball, but yet, you know, from 12 to 15, they really blew all their chances, you know, with the shutdown of Strasburg and then the sweep out of, you know, the first round against the Giants, and then just never really taking a hold of that division or the NLCS. So are we looking at probably an eventual teardown in the next couple of years? Because I don't see this team going anywhere.
You know, you gotta kind of wonder. I mean, it's hard to, you know, it's really hard to decide, because when you look at the team, I mean, there's talent on it. You've just got to kind of wonder if maybe it's chemistry that is kind of holding them back, possibly. You know, just not the right mix of players. But yeah, I don't know.
I just think it's funny though that, you know, traditional manager such as Dusty Baker, who I'm surprised, well, you know, I think maybe the last run with the Nationals kind of killed his career. You know, but I mean, he does have a teenage kid for being an old man that he is. So maybe it's good for him to be home with the kid and all that stuff. But that's neither here nor there. It's just, you know, this NBA style team where you're everyone's buddy-buddy and we're all going to hang out and have a beer after the game kind of crap. Maybe, you know, maybe not even that, go play video games or whatever the hell I'm doing. Maybe this whole, I'm your friend, you're my friend, we're all friends, and we're all going to hang around the campfire tonight and sing Kumbaya kind of mentality isn't really working. They haven't gone to the playoffs.
Nope.
Dusty Baker's been gone.
You know, it's not working for Washington. It may work some places, but it's not working for the Nationals. So, but all right, Dan, well, switching gears here, they announced, you know, we were talking yesterday that the NBA is slowly but surely announcing all these awards, and today was the all NBA team, Dan. Here's the first team, and I want you to tell me what name is missing. We have Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Bucks, Paul George of the Thunder, Nikola Jokic of the Nuggets, James Harden of the Rockets, and Stephen Curry of the Warriors. Who's off the list, Dan? There you go. For the first time in 11 years, LeBron does not make first-team All-NBA. The second team, Dan, consists of Kevin Durant of the Warriors, Kawhi Leonard of the Raptors, Joel Embiid of the 76ers, Damian Lillard of the Trailblazers, and Kyrie Irving of the Celtics. So there you go. We're two teams deep. Finally, the third team, Dan, Blake Griffin of the Pistons, LeBron James of the Lakers, Rudy Gobert of the Jazz, Russell Westbrook of the Thunder, and Kemba Walker of the Hornets. So LeBron drops to third team All-NBA. How do you think the King feels about
that,
man?
Well, not to quote him, but what defines All-Team NBA, whatever?
Yeah, I have no idea how this is selected. I think it's a media-driven award, so it's really not that big a deal. I just thought it was kind of interesting to talk about for the fact that he didn't make it. Actually didn't even make second team. He tumbled all the way down to third. So,
I mean, what does that really mean to our two?
You know what's weird is a lot of guys have bonuses and stuff like that attached to making the All-NBA team. So it does have that kind of effect on certain guys, but I don't know as an award or anything. I mean, it's a lot like any of these things. I don't think a lot of guys care. It's like, oh well, I didn't. Klay Thompson was quoted as saying he would rather win a third championship than be named All-NBA. So it was just kind of like, yeah, okay. But I don't know. It's just one of those fun things.
Or break a season. Whatever. Break the record and then win the championship.
Yeah, it gives people like us stuff to talk about, that just kind of how that works out. And, because there was a lot of talk about guys getting the Supermax deal now, depending on, how they're set up or, how things kind of go for them. So I don't know, if Antetokounmpo is in that. I know there was some talk about Kemba Walker being one of those guys who could receive the Supermax deal. So, just goofy things like that go with it. So,
but see, this is one of those situations where I think they should get rid of All-Star Week. Weekend, whatever the hell you call it. Give the players the week off just for no reason. And then let these all team NBA make four teams. And then do an all-star game in the summer. Or it's like outdoor.
Yeah.
I don't know, something different. You can even do it in two spots, the east and the west. One of the, two different locations.
Yeah, I wonder. Do you think the players' union would go for something like that in the off season? Because obviously that's always
really
the biggest stump.
Well, they don't do anything in the All-Star game anyway, so championship's over with. Let them get in the parade, and then maybe August. Let them have the 4th of July and all that good stuff. The end of July, early August.
Before training camps open, do something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And then, because let's be honest, what is the point of the All-Star? It's just kind of just a fan frenzy. But besides that, it's just a sponsorship drive. It's wouldn't you call it more of NBA's, fundraiser for promoting? That's all they're really doing is getting all this money together from all the sponsors. It's not like they really have to pay these guys. Unless the team, like the Warriors, if their guys have it in their contract that if they make the All-Star team, they get a bonus. So it's not like the NBA has to pay any of the players. So why not just take it in the summer? Give the guys a full week off during the regular season and whatever.
Yes, like LeBron wants, so he can spend time with his family and then travel around the world. So,
exactly.
All right. Well, have you tweeted Adam Silver this yet?
Maybe I will.
There you go. So, and we actually do have a game tonight, Dan, believe it or not. We have the Raptors at the Bucks, game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Of course, the series is tied 2-2. So, Milwaukee looking to hang on to home court. So, all right. Now, Dan, this was the one of, if not the weirdest story I think I possibly have ever heard about college athletics. All right. It's the ready for this, Dan? It's the Minnesota Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, the MIAC, of course, for short. I'm looking to see here are the members, Dan. This is all D3. It's got Augsburg, Bethel, Cartland College, Cordia College, Gustavo Adolphus College, Hamline University, McAllister College. These are easy for me to say. College of St. Benedict, St. Catherine's University, St. John's University, St. Mary's University, St. Olaf College, which I actually almost went to, and the University of St. Thomas. Now, I know, Dan, you're sitting here thinking, why the hell are you bringing this up to me? We got 5 minutes left. Let's just get the podcast over. Well, believe it or not, Dan, these colleges had a vote, and they have voted to throw the University of St. Thomas out of the conference because they are too good, and they win everything. So now tell me, Dan, have you ever in your life, in anything whatsoever, heard of something like this?
No, I thought you were going to say they're trying to join the NCAA or something.
Well, they are in the NCAA. They're just Division III. So, and, you know, and all these schools are located, I believe, in Minnesota, obviously the Minnesota, you know, Intercollegiate Athletic Conference. But, yeah, the complaints were that, you know, they're the biggest school in the conference and they have the most money. But, you know, the fact that they're being thrown out just seems so weird to me that, yeah, these they were actually one of the founding members of this conference, which appears it looks like it started in 1920. Yeah, and now they're out because they are too good. So I don't know, Dan, what can you do or what can you say? I mean, apparently there's no appeal process, so they're just gone. I don't know where that means next year. By now, scheduling is done. So, you know, for like football and stuff. So I don't know how they do anything. So.
Well, maybe they can be the only amateur team in the professional exercise.
I don't know. Yeah, like the article I have here says they won 56 conference titles since 2010, spanning 9 different men and women's sports. So, that's actually more than the rest of the conference combined.
I mean, they should just put together their schedule against all those teams and have everyone forfeit.
Yeah, well, you know, what I was starting to think here, Dan, and this kind of goes right up your alley, does this fall into the conference thinking everybody needs a trophy? You know, I mean, because obviously they were voted out by the other teams. Aren't they just pouting that they could beat them?
Pretty much.
So,
I mean, but maybe they aren't Division III worthy. Maybe they need to move to the next level.
Move up. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So, you know, but yeah, I saw it and I thought it was like the strangest thing. I mean, you know, even as kids, I don't think we threw anybody out of anything because they were too good. You know, that just kind of made us wanted to beat them more. So, but I guess not anymore. If you're too good at what you do, you get tossed. That's why Dan's not here.
Yeah, but. Yeah, but 56 titles in 9 years, 8 years. Maybe they need to get another level. They need better competition.
Of course, we'll do it on the Facebook page. that'll like. But don't forget to put it in the comments down below. This is what's